Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that is devoted to those of you who have either come to realize or at least open to the realization that every one of the world's religious, political, economic, and military establishments is corrupt and counterproductive. I'm Yana. Our number over the next 2 hours, if you'd like to join us, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. On Fridays, we're going to begin talking about life and death issues and then transition to probably the deadliest issue of our time, which is Islam in the second hour. But if you're talking about the death of a soul versus the death of a physical body, the single deadliest institution in the world today, far and away, is the religion of Christianity. And it was founded by a man who was born as Shaul, who was predicted to be the plague of death. And he changed his name to Paul, whom Yahweh refers to as the one called lowly and little, which is what Paulos means in Latin in his Sermon on the Mount. We have Kirk with us. Kirk, the program yesterday, we focused on the two of what I think are the three astonishingly important concepts to understand from Galatians 2:9. And I'm going to read Galatians 2:9 again, and let's briefly cover the two issues that it raises that are absolutely irrecoverable for Christianity, devastating to the religion. And then I want to bring up what I think is the third insight that we can glean for this that is devastating to the persona and character of the author of this statement.
Okay.
It reads, "And having known and recognized the grace," I'm sorry, I now need to say there are four issues with this. We covered the issue with grace in yesterday's program. "And having known and recognized the grace," which is the gratia, the pagan goddesses, "of the one having been given to me, Jacob and Kephesh, and also Yaukanan, the ones presently presumed and supposed by the opinions of many and assumed to be pillars, the right hand they gave to me, and to Barnabas, fellowship as a result. We to the nations and ethnicities, but they to the circumcision." All right, so the first issue I've already highlighted. Yahweh, in the first statement that he etched in stone, says that you're not going to exist with other gods beside me.
Right.
And elsewhere he says, do not memorialize the names of pagan gods and goddesses. Right. Yeah, I think that we have to be really careful on it. I think he said, don't have it be on your lips, which, would indicate
that. Well, I don't mean you can't talk about it.
Yeah, because uses Baal all the time to speak of the god, the chief god, the lord of Babylon and other pagan religions. And he talks about Astarte, which became the Mother Earth, Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, the basis for Isis, the basis for even Mary, the Mother of God, Queen of Heaven in the Catholic religion.
Right.
So he is not violating his own instruction. So he doesn't have any issue with us using these terms to point out that they're not God, and that God does not want you memorializing them. Now, the example there would be, for example, Jesus is the horned one of is the savior of the Druid religion, where the horned one is God.
Right.
So we ought not be using Jesus as the name for God. It's appropriate to say the name and say there's no one associated or affiliated with God in any way that bears that name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not how Paul's using grace here. He's saying that grace is being, declares it, grace, the gratia, and in Latin, the charis, and the way that he formed this letter, the charis, the charities, were associated with him.
Right.
That's really bad.
No dispute there.
Yeah, no dispute. Absolutely and wholly opposed to Yahweh and Yahusha and their teaching. All right, so that's the first of them. The second issue arises when he names the three most important disciples. Jacob, Kephish, and Yahochanan. Far and away. Now, we know far and away that the most important is when Yahweh had the opportunity to choose who he was going to provide his prophetic revelation to about the history of the last 2,000 years, the history of mankind over 2,000 years with his open letters and revelation and peeks not only into the nature of heaven, but also into the last days. Who did he choose?
Yahochanan.
Who did he tell to take care of his mother?
Yahochanan.
Right. Who is the disciple that actually said, and man, you would not say this unless it was absolutely true. Who was the disciple that said of Yahusha, I am the disciple whom he loved?
Yahochanan.
Reluctantly. Right. And when Yahusha is speaking about Yahochanan in Ephesus, as he's really revealing the open letter, doesn't he compliment the Ephesians and say, you never left the first love? And who is the first love?
Mm-hmm.
The teachings provided by Yahochanan to the Greeks in Ephesus.
All right.
Which, by the way, is the single most important city in the Greek world at this time. Not Athens, Ephesus.
Yes.
Shimon Kephish, listen to him, Shimon, Kephish, meaning the rock. When Yahusha was saying, upon this, this rock, this sur, so upon, which is al in Hebrew, this sur, rock, I'm going to build bana, build the family name, build the home. It's based on bien and beeth, the home and child. I'm going to build my mikra, which is my invitations to call out. Who did he say that he was going to build that with?
Shimon Kephish.
Okay, so you got Shimon Kephish here and Yahochanan, who are clearly the two most important disciples. And then you have a choice on Jacob. There were two Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
One was a fisherman, the other was a carpenter and Yosha's brother.
Right.
They would easily be either third or fourth, depending on which Jacob we're talking about here in terms of importance as it relates to Yahweh.
Yes.
And Yosha. All right. So the reason that this is important here is because Paul associates them with Dokii. These, the ones who were presumed and regarded, in this case, is presumed to be pillars. The other places were presumed to be important because of their past.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's named those who he said who were presumed to be important because of their past, who are now presumed to be pillars. He has named those three individuals who he said earlier in this chapter, their testimony was meaningless, worthless.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even consider it.
Right.
So that means that the three people that Yahusha chose, taught, and stated emphatically were those that he was going to use and did use to communicate to us. And it's their witness that is so crucial to us. Paul said they're worthless. Their testimony was meaningless to me. Doesn't that put him in absolute conflict with Yahusha?
Well, of course, it means everything was meaningless that he did.
So you have to be perverted, mentally disturbed, absolutely moronic, or twisted beyond reason, insane, to believe that Paul spoke for the Christian Jesus.
Correct.
I mean, really, I mean, this is when he names these three individuals and we consider who they are. And he said just in three sentences earlier that their testimony was absolutely meaningless, worthless. You have to be either completely and totally ignorant or insane. I mean, you're irrational to the point of being insane. You're a danger to yourself to think that this guy is speaking for God.
Yes, totally irreconcilable. What am I trying to say?
Irreconcilable.
You're right.
they're in absolute opposite camps. You could not be more opposed to the Christian Jesus than this fellow right here, this Paul fellow. It's impossible.
No.
And so it's Paul against everyone, against God, against the disciples, against the prophets, against the Torah, against reason, against evidence. He's out there on a limb, and if you're with him on that limb, you're an idiot. And that's just all there is to it. You're an absolute idiot if you're out there on that limb with him. Shame on you. And, you know, it's not a victimless crime. I don't give a hoot that, you know, what people do to their bodies, you can take all the drugs you want to take. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you do with your time. You can squander it all day playing video games if you want. Don't give a hoot. Don't care that you choose not to pay attention to what God had to say and you disregard his teaching in the Torah. Don't care. But, you know, this religious thing is not a victimless crime.
No.
When you donate to that church, when you go to that church, when you take your parents to that church, when you invite your friends to go to that church, you lure those that you have influenced to their spiritual death.
Absolutely.
Not a victimless crime. So that's the second conflict here, that this one statement from Paul in Galatians, his first letter, should have been enough for, and is enough for, any informed and rational person to discard all of his letters and his religion along with it.
And of course, he is consistent.
Yep.
In all his other letters, I mean.
Yeah, he is. Now, there's the third aspect. That is, he says that he was speaking to the world, and that they agreed that he would witness to the world, and they would witness the testimony of circumcision.
Uh-huh.
So he was the opposite of them.
Right.
So let's consider the consequence of that when we return, and then the final and fourth issue. So the third of the four irreconcilable issues, absolutely deadly mistakes,
mm-hmm.
Fatal mistakes that Paul makes in this in Galatians 2:9, is that he claims the ethnicities, and he claims that he was given the ethnicities, which is the world apart from Jews,
mm-hmm.
And that the Yaukanan, Jacob and Shimon Kefesh, James, Peter and John, are limited to circumcision, the message of circumcision. So we have a couple of issues with that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
One is, can you be part of the covenant without being circumcised as a male?
The fifth requirement is you must actually, of your own volition, choose to be circumcised. Ands, ifs, or buts.
Yeah. Circumcised of the spirit and of the flesh, according to Yahweh, and he's really clear about it. It's the sign of the covenant. And so, if you're not circumcised, can you participate in Passover?
You cannot.
So you can't have a relationship with God. You cannot become immortal. The purpose of Passover is for eternal life. And if you don't participate in Passover, you can't participate in Matzah, because Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim are all one event, one integrated feast and festival.
And to do so is even more deadly.
Yeah.
Eternally.
Yeah. So you'd be precluded, and Paul, of course, would discourage participation in Matzah and Bikurim anyway. But so you're precluded eternal life and salvation. You're precluded a relationship with God, because the covenant is the only way to have a relationship. And you put yourself at uncircumcision in the context of the hundreds of times that Yahweh uses it derogatorily. Failed, estranged from him, disgusting, deadly, every inadequate, every bad thing that you can associated with. So that's part of it. And the other half is, of course, it's wholly inconsistent with the evidence. Now, if you make a statement that's wholly inconsistent, 100% inconsistent with the evidence, there's an English word, three letters long, that that is used to describe a statement which is invalid. What is that word?
Lie.
Lie. So this is a lie, and since it's a lie in a book that's supposed to be inspired by God, that either makes the God a liar or this man a liar, because it's a lie. Yael Conan, as you pointed out 2 days ago, spent almost all of his remaining life in the Greek world. In the center of really the Greek world at that time, which was Ephesus. And James, I think, went to Egypt, didn't he?
I understand. Oh, Matthew.
Matthew went to Egypt. Where did James go? Jacob.
You know, one of them got killed.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you read the Clement homilies, it's pretty... pretty obvious that Paul tried to kill James,
yeah.
Threw him down a bunch of stairs.
Right.
And of course we know that Shimon Kefesh ended up dying in Rome. So he went to Rome. In fact, the reason that Mark exists is that Mark was his attaché and translator as he went up to Rome. So the evidence, and of course, Yosha said, I'm sending you out to the whole world, and the whole purpose, Shimon himself has the testimony in Acts where he says, no, what you're saying, Paul, is untrue. The proof of it is what happened here on Shavuah, where the Spirit came down and we were given the ability to speak every language of every ethnicity that we could possibly go to. And so what you're saying is factually untrue, meaning it's a lie.
And of course, Paul would never quote Barashith 12:2, which is, you know, where he says, Yahweh says his desire is to magnify, distinguish, elevate, empower great things with all people from different races and places.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Yehudim.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So yeah, he says there's one Pesach that he invites, specifically invites Goyim.
Mm-hmm.
And he says there's one Torah, and he says it's for Goyim and Yehudim. He says there's one covenant, it's for Goyim and Yehudim. And as a matter of fact, as part of the sign of the covenant, Abraham was asked to circumcise every male, regardless if they were descendants of he and Sarah or not.
Right.
It's only one
so
covenant.
So you've got nothing.
Right.
Paul.
Right. So Paul lied. Paul is on the side of uncircumcision, which is deadly and failed. Paul is associated with the pagan goddesses of grace, and Paul is wholly isolated from Yosha's traces of the disciples. But there's another problem still. So as we've said, there are four issues with this statement. The first is that Paul is associating with pagan goddesses. The Charis, which are the charities, Gratia, which are the graces, and that's a deadly mistake from God's point of view. Very few things you can do worse than that. He's rather the same. I mean, he could have said, and having seen Yahweh associate with me, but he didn't. And having seen Yahusha associated with me, but he didn't. Having seen the set apart spirit associated with me, but he didn't. Having seen my affinity for the Torah and the prophets, but he didn't. What he said instead was, having seen the charis, the charities, the gratia, the graces associated with me. That's deadly, folks. I mean, to tell you, black and white, irresolvable.
Mm-hmm.
And then going on to say that it is Jacob, Kefesh, and Yael Conan, James, Peter, and John that are the supposed pillars whose testimony was meaningless to him. of no worth whatsoever. That's an irreconcilable problem if you're informed and rational. So, man, if you're a Christian now, all you got is blind faith in a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. And then you got the lie that Paul is saying, yeah, they agreed. They are just going to limit themselves to the circumcision and I've got the rest of the world. It's mine. All right, as he's affirming here that it's his and Barnabas, as if they were a team, but they wouldn't even be a team for another week. They broke up on the way out of town. And it's factually incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the antagonism towards and the disassociation with circumcision, which is the sign of the covenant. No circumcision, no eternal life, no relationship with God, no entry into heaven. But there's another issue. This is reveals Paul's character. Let me read this again. And it's a subtlety, but it's really important. It says, and having known and having recognized the charis, the charities of the one having been given to me, Jacob and Kephesh and also Yaokanan, the ones presently presumed pillars, the right hand they gave to me, and Barnabas fellowship. There's a distinction. They gave Barnabas koinonia, participation, association, fellowship. Hey, you want to come in and be one of the boys? Let's go and have a beer.
Yeah. Oh.
Barnabas fellowship. Who do they, according to Paul, give the right hand to?
To Paul.
Now, from a historic point of view, and this is, by the way, true even in cultures today.
Sure.
If you're standing at the right hand, you're the heir apparent, aren't you?
You're the power, you're the place of authority, and the heir. Yeah,
right.
That would be true.
Right. So he's claiming that the disciples gave him the right hand. That's not. That does not mean they stuck out their right hand to shake his hand. That's not what it says at all. They're giving fellowship to Barnabas. They're offering the right hand to Paul.
Yeah, they're passing the scepter.
That is exactly right. They're stepping aside and giving Paul authority. That's what it says. Paul is claiming that those Yosha set out to witness to the world stepped aside and gave all authority to him.
Yeah. I know why you're bowing to his point of view.
Correct. That he is the heir apparent. He has the power. They passed him the torch. They've given him the position of power and authority. Wow, collectively. That's pretty interesting, because you'd think if that had happened, there'd be no reason for Yaokanan and John to go off to Ephesus. There'd be no reason for Shimon Kephesh, Peter, to have been called the rock upon which the Mikre, that called out in invitations to meet with God, which Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim just happened to be the first three. There's no reason that Yahweh would have made that statement. Can't be a St. Peter's. There can't be a seat of St. Peter.
No.
Not under this basis. And most certainly can't be in a Vatican in Rome. Holy crap. Shakespeare, we got a problem.
No. You got nothing.
You got nothing at this point.
You got nothing over here. Now, let me ask you a question. Christians obviously don't pursue that line of reasoning on any of this. They don't even pursue Paul. I have to confess, I've looked at my years as a Christian, when I was a Christian, and I condensed it down to, I was thinking about what I really read and studied, and I studied the Torah. We call it the Old Testament then, of course, but
isn't that just weird? Isn't that a weird term?
Yeah, to me it's bizarre.
Weird term, Old Testament. If somebody in common language, if you say, does somebody provide you with their testament?
Mm-hmm.
That's their last will and testament, isn't it? I mean, it's a document you might look at to decide how you divvy up the proceeds of somebody who has passed,
right,
who is dead. The Old Testament, that's the will and testimony of, and the way to divvy up the whatever is left of the God who has died. What a terrible term.
And let's read the will.
Right. And then you'd have a New Testament. Well, why would there be a new one if the old one's no longer valid? Why would you why would a new one be seen credible? And if the old one is valid, why would you have a new one?
Well, that was the problem. But you know, as a Christian, I read the Torah and the Psalms and the Prophets, and I really love the Prophets and Psalms. Everybody loves the Psalms, especially of Dode. And then there was, but the quote unquote New Testament, all I really concentrated on was Matthew, a little bit of John, and Revelations, and I think my love of the Prophets. So Paul, even though I've heard hundreds of sermons about Paul, I couldn't quote a thing he said. In fact, I didn't understand 90% of what he said, because by the time they twist it, and you've been good enough in this book, Questioning Paul, to show this is a New Living Testament version, this is the King James version, this is such and such. And even those are so twisted and so separate from each one, I could line up 26 Bibles, or 26 translation Bible, and five or six other Bibles I've got
only be certain of one thing. Either no one can figure out what Paul said.
Right.
And no one understands what he said, or what he said is so convoluted that if they presented it accurately and consistently, his letters would be thrown out just because they're nonsense.
So I just ignored him.
Yeah.
I thought the good news was, I didn't help me. I mean, if I didn't find the truth, I still would have been just as dead as everybody else.
Yes, there's a difference though between being misled and not being led in the right direction. I mean, the ultimate is being led in the right direction is the best of all options. Being led by Yahweh's Torah guidance. Being no longer being misled by Paul, for example, is a lot better than continuing to be misled. Because if you're continuing to be misled, even when somebody points out the stupidity of Paul's letters, you're likely to be unaffected by it.
But it must be that they just don't think that much about Paul. The religious leaders obviously do, because that's what they're selling. But the average Christian could not possibly read this stuff.
And if you're a religious leader, you're a pastor, and you're spewing this stuff out.
Yeah,
there's something. I mean, you're sick.
You are.
You are. You're a sick, twisted, perverted, immoral, disgusting person. I mean, if you took a moment to think about what you were doing, you'd know that you were deceiving those people in your congregation, and you just ought not be doing that. And if you don't take a moment to think, and you're going to spew it out anyway because they're paying you to do it, shame on you. You're a blight on society. And if you do take a moment, and you're incapable of figuring this out, then you ought not be opening your mouth.
Yeah, don't make it your career. You don't know what you're talking about.
Right. You ought not make God your career anyway.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? The absurdity of making a career something you can't figure out.
Right.
Is if you're not an expert in your field, and if you can read this, you can translate it, and you can't come up with.
Right.
So Christianity must be about, I just don't care.
Yeah, you know, I think that the best comparison I have ever seen is Saul versus Dode, David.
Mm-hmm.
Shaul versus David. It is the Torah, because David speaks more eloquently about the Torah and about Yahweh than does, and more clearly and more brilliantly than anyone else.
Right.
And so it's about Dode and his relationship with Yahweh based upon his understanding of the Torah. Because, you know, when you read about Dode, There's no physical meeting between Dode and Yahweh.
No, no angel.
Dode come. No, no, no meeting with an angel, a malach. No individual. Let's break bread and eat a meal together. The relationship that Dode has with Yahweh came about exactly the same way that the relationship between Yahweh and you and I have come about.
Through the Torah.
Through the Torah. He read the Torah. That's where he saw, met, came to know, fell in love with, came to understand Yahweh. That's exactly the same way that we have the opportunity to do so today. And no one knew him better. I would dare say, in fact, I'm certain of it, mm-hmm. Moshe, who physically met with Yahweh, didn't know Yahweh as well as Dode. Adam, who spent time one-on-one with Yahweh, didn't know him as well. And I've read the commentary, the discussions, the conversations of Abraham. Mm-hmm. I am certain Abraham did not know Yahweh as well as Dode. So this is where we have come, Kirk, that there is absolutely nothing left for any hope of credibility with Paul. The second chapter of Galatians is wholly and completely destructive.
I personally like to be backed into a corner where it's an either-or scenario. I mean, if the facts can back you in there, and they obviously can, then you pick your yeah. poison if you want it. If you don't, then they'll pick you over.
But, I mean, let me just read this one thing, because it's just hilarious to me. You know, the New Living Translation considers itself a translation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a paraphrase. Let me read to you what, because I've just read what Galatians 2:9 says in the Greek. This is how it begins. It begins, in fact. There was no Greek word for in fact. No, in fact, no. There was no Greek word in fact. James, Peter, and John. Were any one of those three names written?
Never.
No.
Never.
So, James, Peter, and John, all wrong. Who were known as pillars. We've been through this word all the way through, and every place where it's used, you know, the Greek word for known is to know is gnosko.
Yeah.
And if he wanted to say the known pillars, he would have said gnosko. He didn't. You know, he
opposed.
Dokia is the word he used. He wanted who were presumed to be, who were supposed, who were of the opinions of others.
Insulting.
And so far. In fact, there is no basis for. There's no basis for James, Peter, or John. And then there's no basis for we're known. So far, they haven't got a single word right, except for pillars. They've got pillars right. But what's interesting is pillars is based upon storos, which is the upright pillar, which is the word that was changed to cross.
Cross, yeah.
But here, of course, they don't want to change it to cross, do they?
No.
Because who are the supposed crosses?
Yeah.
But it does prove that storos, which is the word used here, is and which is the word that is the basis for, it means upright pillar. It's the equivalent of edon in Hebrew, the upright pillar of the tabernacle. There is no cross in Yah's parlance. So they got pillars right, but to get it right, they proved that every time they wrote cross, they got that wrong.
Yeah.
Of the church. Pillars of the church! Was there any... I mean, was there the Greek word that is changed to church is ecclesia?
Ecclesia.
Was there ecclesia in that statement?
No.
No! So, of the church. Good God, they weren't of the church. They were of the circumcision, stupid!
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how in the world could somebody publish rubbish like this and pretend that it's the inerrant word of God when thus far they have one word out of the first 12 right? Pillar. It doesn't mention church.
Well, it.
And then he has recognized. We don't recognize in there. And then he has gift that God had given me. Gift that God had given me. He wrote Charis.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't write God. Theos is God. Theos isn't in the text.
No.
And Charis is. Charis isn't gift.
Hardly.
I mean, it's just stunning.
Well, they obviously...
And they accepted Barnabas and me as their co-workers. There's no Greek word in that text for accepted. There's no Greek word for co-workers. And the right hand was associated only with Paul, and fellowship was associated only with Barnabas.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't say that they accepted Barnabas and me. As a matter of fact, it's Paul listed first and Barnabas second. They haven't, I mean, there's no reference to co-worker, and there's no reference to accepted. Then it says, and they encouraged us to keep pursuing keep preaching to the Gentiles. There is no they.
I'm trying to find that in there.
There is no encouraged, no basis whatsoever for encouraged.
No.
There is no word for preaching in the Greek. There's no reference to Gentiles. It's ethnicities.
Mm-hmm. Ethno.
And they continued work. There is no, they're continued. There is no reference to work with the Jews. No, it says circumcision. Doesn't say Jews. Man alive.